But it was all that I could do to keep from crying.
Well, you know who had his ashes spread at home plate?
The dude that did the Go Cubs Go song.
Yeah,
wasn't his name Goodman?
Steve Goodman.
You know what else he wrote?
He wrote the perfect country and western song, and then he sent it to either Waylon Jennings or one of those guys.
Well, a friend of mine named Steve Goodman wrote that song, and he told me it was the perfect country and western song.
They read it, and they said, this is almost perfect, but you didn't mention anything about mama or prison.
Because he hadn't said anything at all about mama.
Or train. Or pickup trucks.
Or trucks.
So then Goodwin allegedly wrote the next verse, which was, it was raining the day my mama got out of prison.
The day my mom got out of prison.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Thomas Hall on the board. S&P futures were coming back a little bit from yesterday's big rally. Down only 5, though. It was a big rally yesterday. NASDAQ futures down 28. Dow futures down 16. In case you were snoozing yesterday, the market was up 236. The Dow 37 and the S&P. NASDAQ up 123. So we came back pretty strong from a few bad days, and now today we're kind of leaking the other way a little bit. Do we have Mr. Lou?
I believe I'm here.
Yes,
I
you
can
are,
hear you.
Bud. Yes, you are, bud. How are you?
I'm okay. What's going on there?
Well, we've got market kind of in a little bit of a September funk, but not horrible. We had a big day yesterday, and we're starting to see some prices flying back up again in oil, and then natural gas is to the moon. I just heard this morning that propane's up. Are you a propane guy?
I am. We use propane up at the house.
Is it creeping up like everybody says it is?
I think it is. This again, the energy policies of the administration have been disastrous, not just for gasoline, but propane and LNG and all that good stuff. So yeah, it's, this is part of what I consider to be the general incoherence of the administration on so many issues, but this is one of them. I don't get where we're headed in terms of our energy policy following, relatively 3 or 4 years of relatively straightforward, we'll produce what our economy can sustain and continue our gradual move toward a lower carbon emissions footprint.
Yeah, I don't know. There doesn't seem to be a whole hell of a lot of, I don't know, Lou. I think obviously as a citizen of the world, you want to leave the place at least as good as when you got here, right? Because other people before didn't do so good. So I am all for taking care of things, but the idea that somehow somebody says we are responsible for global warming, therefore you should do this. Well, I get to do whatever I feel like doing.
The whole global warming argument is as a reason to do things for us is BS.
Sure it is.
And I'm not going to, I want to talk about our friend General Milley, but I will digress briefly just to say, if you want to read some interesting stuff on this, look at Michael Schellenberger's discussions about global warming and how counter-effective things like our efforts on renewables are right now, given our technology, versus a relatively straightforward plan to mitigate the impact of global warming. The hurricane in New Orleans was a classic example that just came through. Mitigate the impact of global warming, which actually will cost less in terms of economic impact than shutting down a third of our economy, and then develop energy sources that aren't carbon emitting, and that's nukes. And if you can't, at least for right now, and if we can't figure out a way to do that and put aside our ideological craziness, then we deserve what happens to us.
Well,
the short answer is we're not the big carbon emitter issue right now, and neither is Western Europe. We've both reduced our dependence on carbon-based fuels, and are moving toward you know, a less dangerous kind of emission profile. But that is a negligible impact on overall CO2 levels because of what's happening in China and India and some other places. And I don't think we're in a position to lecture them about, hey, you guys should be backing down on this stuff, because they are trying to take care of their people too.
Well, yeah, it is a very difficult problem. This whole thing, I don't know, you know, I'm starting to hear the same record over and over again. Now, I don't know the whole history of energy in Illinois. I mean, I would love to have a guest on that kind of has the whole history and can point me in the right direction. I can read some stuff. But this week, our governor, who I don't understand at all, to be honest with you, somehow or another, Commonwealth Edison has got themselves in a position where they put these nukes up 50 years ago, 40 years ago, something like that. So there's one at Braden.
They've been operating for a while.
Yeah, so one at Braden, and the useful life was supposed to be 25, 30 years or something. I mean, I'm round numbers here, but they ended up buying Allegheny Energy as soon as the Public Utility Holding Company Act was revoked, right? That act was put in place by Roosevelt because the guy who ran Commonwealth Edison, who was probably one of the biggest thieves ever, what was his name, Sam Imsell, was trying to buy other people's utility companies. And Roosevelt's group said, well, there's no real reason for the people in Illinois to own the coal-fired power plant in Pennsylvania. Why? I mean, there's no connection there. Well, they're just doing it because they want to raise price, whatever they're doing. So they had this. You couldn't do that. So all of a sudden they get rid of the act. Well, anyway, these guys. The good news is they bought this Allegheny Energy, and evidently Allegheny Energy had some people there because they had some nukes out there that were really well trained at extending the life of these nukes. So this Braidwood is the one we're talking about, and now we're the second round where Commonwealth Edison is threatening to shut it down unless the state gives them $700 million to, like, upgrade. They're the ones that are selling the stuff. They're the ones that get paid. They keep getting the rates raised for electricity. Why the hell would the state have to pay for the plant and give them the money for the electricity? Well, what am I missing here? Look, the thing that continues to astound me and has me absolutely terrified of the economics going forward is we're doing 1973 all over again with this, only probably three times as worse on the money supply stuff. So we're driving inflation into the system, but now we have such a dominance of cartels and oligopolies and monopolies. I don't see how it isn't in every all these places. They're not only raising prices to beat the band, they're also getting all this money from government that they keep dragging out of these people. I mean, how do you do both? I don't remember that going on in 73, although maybe I was just too young and naive.
Well, but this is, I don't know about, so I can't speak to what happened in Illinois in 1973, but I can tell you that this is one of the manifestations of a state-created monopoly. You know, the state creates the monopoly with regard to your utility company. You shouldn't be too surprised down the road when the monopoly looks around and says, I got these people over a barrel. I can come back and say, look, either you give me this or your prices go up and your service delivery gets lousy, and pretty soon you're looking like California with rolling blackouts. So, you know, that's really no surprise to me how that's happened. And again, we get back to the issue of general competence in government and the effectiveness of your elected people who campaign on, you know, not on their intelligence and ability to understand things, but on hot button issues with whatever they think is going to push the electorate in their direction. And this is what you end up with. I look at the recall results in California, and I think of two things. Number one, I think the Republican Party there should be fired and set, shipped out to sea, because they're totally useless in terms of their ability to mobilize the electorate. But the second thing I look at is you've got that many people who have essentially bought into an ideological perspective that ignores the reality of what is around them, then you don't have effective government. I mean, I don't know how a state with effectively third world electrical grid that is burning up in large part because of their failure, the governor's deliberate failure to fund forest management, that has huge water problems because their ideological perspective is that dams are bad. All of this you can lay at the state or at the feet of the state executive and the party that's run the state for 50 years, and yet you still vote for those people. I don't get it, except that if you've got a large population that buys into this, then you will, you know, they will ignore the reality and vote in a direction their ideology tells them to go.
Well, I mean, I think you have I have a piece of paper here, Lou, from before when you used to come in once in a while. It said they were talking about a survey. Of course, surveys mean nothing, so I guess what I'm saying means nothing. But they talked about somebody went out and gave a survey and said that they do not, the average person does not want anybody to raise taxes, but they don't want any cuts in it, but they want cuts in spending, but not in anything that affects them.
Oh, yeah.
But it's funny, Lou, when you talk about economics and how it works or doesn't work, and as I age here and see this and do the stuff we do every day, and listen to people on the show and have people write into me and so forth, I can see where the Milton Friedmans of the world, as brilliant as they were, and when I say that I mean Nobel Prize winning economists, they absolutely are missing pieces. Now, I'm not smart enough to put the pieces in, okay, but when we studied monopolies and cartels and so forth, matter of fact, Milton Friedman was a guy who felt that if he actually could clone himself for 6 months and do a huge study, he actually thought that maybe a monopoly was better than an oligopoly or a cartel in terms of pricing at the end. In theory, he thought he could work it out, but he never did. But the thing we never talked about, Lou, they'd give an assignment and they'd say, okay, assume a monopoly, assume perfect competition. Nobody ever was able to, I mean, we never tried to inject the political side of monopoly and the power that brings. And to me, that's, I don't see how we stopped that. I mean, it's Commonwealth Edison is an absolute abortion, for God's sake. I mean,
I think in large part that's because we, in the classic economic models, at least the limited economic models that I studied, the classic economic models assume that a monopoly developed as a result of unfettered free market capitalism that then devolved into economic control. I don't recall any particular discussions about an alignment between.
I don't either. You made my point better than I did. That's exactly right.
These entities, and state and local governments or federal governments, where you have a government that comes in and basically sets up the monopoly and then provides the monopoly with the regulatory cover that it needs to operate.
Well, that's right. And the difference between, well, 2 points here. One thing, as you know, and I think you've been on a couple times when I've ranted, when I don't know near as much about the Constitution. I mean, you've forgotten more than I know, but I'm going to say we need some sort of a constitutional convention on every level. I mean, in Illinois we do, a city, state, and whatever. But I really do think we need one on the federal level. The two things that are driving the politics in this country are a couple of things that, God rest his soul, who's the judge that thought he knew about everything that everybody meant at the first, the conservative guy that died in Texas? No,
the conservative guy from Texas, he
croaked in Texas with one of those.
You're talking about Justice Scalia.
Yeah, well, he knew exactly what was in everybody's minds, which is all BS. But even though
it's not what he said, but I realize that's the popular version.
Well, but my point is two things that there's no way they could possibly have anticipated. One is, if you and I decide to in 1812 decided we're gonna pack the Senate or do something. Guess what, Lou? We only lived to 60 back then, and we probably didn't get started till we were 50, and we're gonna croak pretty quick, right? And we'll be gone, you know. But corporations never die, and I don't think they anticipated that sort of power never ending. I mean, we're talking about when was the Public Utility Holding Act passed in the 30s? I mean, he was pulling this crap in the 20s, for God's sake. It's 100 years later, and they're still doing it. And you and I could be elected to governor and lieutenant governor in Chicago. Okay, lieutenant governor doesn't do anything. You and I could be elected in Chicago, and we could kick Commonwealth's ass for 4 years. And you know what? We're out, we're dead, and they're still, and they'll just take it up with the next guy. And I don't see the Constitution.
But that's why, again, this is the power of the state-created monopoly.
They just keep going.
They have an entrenched, at this stage, you know, once you get into this position, you may be involved in, you know, a lot of public disparagement and complaints and everything else, but it's virtually impossible because of the infrastructure that you own and the control that you have. And frankly, Chief, because of the knowledge that you have, it's virtually impossible to move those folks out without a complete top to bottom revamp of your system. And that's too much trouble, and it risks too much dislocation.
Well, yeah, but even right now, you mentioned stuff about.
Is Illinois, and I want to get to Millie, so we're not going to continue this too much longer. But is Illinois prepared to basically fire Con Ed?
No, they have no.
Yeah, are they going to fire? Are they going to fire them?
How can you fire somebody?
Where's our other competitor that's going to come in and take all this over?
How can you fire them, Lou, when everybody's got a check in their pocket, and every cocktail party or dinner you went through, you sat next to a beautiful young lady who was a lobbyist for Commonwealth Edison? After 20 years, how do you fire them? When you've been taking money for them that length of time.
But theoretically, anyway, it would be possible to do that.
No, how
bring
can
in
you?
A competitor. I'm just saying, where's the competitor?
There is none. And for a while.
And so let me tell you, the state representatives of Illinois, God bless their souls, are not smart enough as a group to run this operation. And yet that's what they're doing. And
sure.
So they defer to the executives and the employees of the monopoly that they've created.
Right, absolutely.
Because they're too dumb to take the time, or too lazy to take the time to sit down and work through the economics and work through the balance sheets and come down on these people and say, why are you doing this?
Well, there's
the same thing happened in California.
There was more
ideological control there.
You and I have talked about this. I mean, and I have a buddy. I haven't seen him in ages with the COVID, of course, but he's a high wire man. He was a lineman for the county. And he's married to one of the ladies I know that went to Notre Dame. Matter of fact, get a load of this, Lou. She's got two kids. She's adorable. And her dad graduated with me and played left tackle on the national championship team. So shows you how far we go. But anyway, I remember years ago they had some story about how they raised all the rates because they had all kinds of transformers and stuff that were, too old. And they were going to bring them everything. They were getting more money because they're going to redo the system. Well, this guy tells me he's in Inglewood, right? And they sent him down there. And, of course, he's the only non-neighborhood person with him. And he says, everybody's got an air conditioner. And he said, they're all really nice to him. He said, the machine said 1911 at it. This is like years after that they got this huge bump to go replace all this crap. And he said he had a backup, and he asked one of the kids to get him a big stick. And when he turned it on, he poked it with a stick from 10 feet or 5 feet away because he didn't want to get near it when he turned it on. He goes, the thing said 1911 on it, Lou. I mean, for God's sake. Anyway, I digress. So
I'll ask one last question about state-managed monopolies. And this time I'm going to talk about BNSF and Metrorail. Are they still pouring kerosene on the switches outside Union Station and setting them on fire in the wintertime to keep them warm?
Hopefully. We did that during the, the polar vortex. But, you know, it's actually very effective.
I'm just asking, are we still doing that?
What would you suggest?
I would suggest that they figure out something other than having people walk out there and pour kerosene on switches.
Well, you want to run natural gas and burners like a stove to every one of the switches?
I don't know how, but I would say, you know, I look at that and go, yeah, that's a pretty primitive system, and there's lots that can go wrong with a system that has switches that are ineffective in cold weather. In Chicago, I'm pretty sure you're going to see cold weather during the winter.
I'm going to say you only need that when it's like minus 10, which hopefully isn't. We got to go to break. When we come back, let's talk about your general. SP Futures down 5, NASDAQ Futures down 34. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie. Thomas Hall on the board. SP Futures down 6. NASDAQ Futures down 33. A little bit of a sell-off here after yesterday's huge rally. Dow Futures are down 8. Over in Europe, we've got as soon as my machine wants to move here, a little balky this morning. DAX is up 95. No, they didn't catch all
is
of our rally yesterday.
Machine or operator error?
Well, the machine's probably as old as me, but I have several of them here. This is the one I get the...
Are there machines that are old as you?
I don't know, maybe. FTSE up 34. The one I do all my quotes on. Now, that one's good. Kick around up 73. That's 1.1%. So these guys are bouncing back based on our big move yesterday. The, we're in Asia. These guys have been all over the place, too. A Nikkei down 188.6. Shanghai, though, down 49. That's 1.3%. Hang Seng down another 365. That's 1.5%. I'm going to say they've got a big problem there. We may talk about it in a second with Lou. They are trying to put some real controls on these casinos in Macau. And it's beating the hell out of this Hang Seng market. And they want to have regulators in the casino. It's like having IRS agents in the casino in Vegas, for God's sake. And I don't think it's all, it's very welcome, shall we say. As a review, yesterday Dow was up 236, S&P up 37, NASDAQ up 123. It was up a little higher than that during the day and came back a little bit. Bonds, 1.31, it's up 1 basis point. The Bund, minus 0.30, that's unchanged. Japan, positive 0.04, where it's been like forever. Oil has been making pretty good moves, although it's come back a little bit here. It was up earlier this morning. Down 17 cents, 72.44. Brent down 14 cents, 75.32. Natural gas down 15 cents to 5.30. But that's, I'm going to say this thing got down to 240 or something. What a great buy that was. Boy, that was like a year ago. RBOB unchanged at 220. And we've got gold down $17 to $17.77. Silver down 37 cents, 23.43. Copper down 9 cents, 4.31. As everybody somehow is buying this total BS about this inflation, this inflation number. But we've got other stuff to talk about with Lou. Thomas, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs lose, Sox lose, everybody loses.
Yes, and it seems that way, Chief. It is currently 66 degrees here in the Chicagoland area. We are looking at getting a high of around 78. So it looks like we're going to be pretty clear and comfortable for the most part of the day. Our Phoenix listeners are currently looking at 78 degrees, and they will get to a nice cozy 105, as Chief had just stated. The Cubs and Sox did lose, but before we got to that, let me just talk about the traffic here in Chicagoland area. As on the I-57 inbound, the troopers have just finished a shooting investigation. Lanes are opening back up at around 159th. There was a big backup that started around 167th. The breakup will start quickly, and around three lanes are back open around 147th on the inbound coming in. So something to think about as they're coming in today, Chief, on the I-57. As we get back around to sports, we look at the Sox, who did lose 3-2 off of a home run in the eighth inning off Kopech. Marsh of the Los Angeles Angels did hit that. So the Sox lose 3-2. The Cubs, as they try to finish off the season, are also losers. They lose the game in the ninth inning on a pass ball, and that game ended up 6-5. The Cubs will play Philly today, and the Sox will finish off with the Anaheim Angels later on this evening. Chief.
Yeah. Lou, real quick, I dragged out a word we're not supposed... Oh, by the way, regarding this I-57 investigation, now we can't have any police of really maybe one car on any of the expressways. So as soon as somebody gets shot, we close it for God knows forever. All of a sudden, we have all kinds of police that can walk up and down the thing and look for the what do they call it? What's the word?
What do you want to do? Take a broom sweep to the side and keep it going?
I'm saying they look for this stuff. And I'm going to say, if I was a betting man, there's a 1 in 10 chance of anybody being arrested. And this goes on every day, Lou. Every day.
Yeah. Well, I mean the police don't have any incentive to arrest anybody. Unless they actually, unless they shoot a police officer.
No, it's really pretty scary. I didn't want to run by you. One of my attorney friends, I was talking to him the other night, and he does all this criminal defense work, so he's 26. Someday when you come back, I'd love to introduce you to him. You guys would be quite the pair. I'd have to head off and talk to somebody else. But he was telling me that he actually thinks that, Kim Fox, in addition to, with all the criticism people gives her, he says she's actually taking a very federal approach to this. And that's why nobody gets prosecuted. Because Bill does, his name's Bill, does both federal and state, whatever you want to call it, county work, state law work. He says the federal courts will never take a case unless they got a 95% chance of winning it. They just won't bring it.
You're talking about the Department of Justice.
Yes, because they just won't bring it. He said in most of these cases where you've got all these shootings and stuff, the evidence, even though it appears fairly obvious, and you're talking about people that have done a bunch of other things before, which doesn't make them guilty in this event, He goes, if she doesn't have it absolutely buttoned up, she won't go forward. And, cause she's got the same view. He doesn't want a guy like me winning case after case, which he's done for 30 years because they screw it up and the case isn't that strong and somebody beats it if you can get away
with it. That's ridiculous. And another marker of why that woman shouldn't be in a position as a chief prosecutor.
Well, question.
So let me ask you guys. Let me jump in here. What is the threshold, right? You're saying it needs to be 95%. So for someone who maybe is not maybe understanding or just a layman's term of understanding of the process, I would think like 95% chance. Like, okay, that seems reasonable to me. Why would you bring anything less than 95% if you didn't really feel that that case was that strong?
Thomas, I sort of have the same question. I mean, what would be the number, Lou? I mean, his point is the federal case goes way overboard, and plus they'll throw any amount of resources to win the damn thing. Once they start to where they just bury the guy, even if he loses. I mean, but on the other side of it, your witnesses are wobbly. Your all kinds of stuff is screwed up on the other side, especially these expressway shootings. I mean, how hard is it to prosecute one of those cases?
Well, let me put it this way: when you find a car that has a gun in it, shell casings in it that match to the rounds fired into another car that kill one of your friends, and these people basically confess that they shot at another car that was shooting at them, you can throw those people in jail for homicide. It's not first degree homicide. It might have a mitigating feature of I was responding to gunfire. But that's reckless endangerment and homicide.
I'm with you.
If you're not
man.
Willing to take that off the street, then you don't deserve to be a prosecutor.
Agree.
You are.
Okay, you're the general. What is going on with this thing?
With Millie?
Yeah.
All right, so let's assume for the moment, and I this may not be an unwarranted assumption, let's assume for the moment that the Woodward book is true. And again, I don't know who the source on this book is. I'm assuming it's Millie himself. Why you would tell a journalist that, I have no idea, but Trump told him a bunch of stupid stuff too. Let's assume it's true that Millie A called his Chinese counterpart,
which would be
in an unauthorized phone call, and told him, hey, I know that you guys are nervous about what we're doing right now, but there will not be an attack against you where I don't pick the phone up and call you and tell you it's coming. Let's assume that's true, and then let's assume the second part of this is true, that you take aside a number of your subordinates and when I say subordinates, I mean people of lower rank, not in the chain of command, because the JCS is not in the chain of command for this kind of thing. You take a number of your subordinates aside and say, look, I know the president gives orders, but we're the ones that have to execute it, so we're going to make sure that we don't execute anything that we don't agree with and that looks suspicious. So the first instance of the call to China indicates, and this guy has said things that indicate to me that, notwithstanding his whatever military expertise he's got, he's a simpleton. And I say that with all the pejorative baggage that attaches to it. I'm not feeling particularly charitable toward the military these days because of the vaccine issue, but that's another story. He's a simpleton, because only a simpleton would allow yourself to be convinced that white supremacy is the problem that you have to deal with in your ranks, and that you've got to deal with this issue of white rage as a problem, and that you've embraced certain elements of critical race theory. And only a simpleton would think that by picking the phone up and calling one of my most dangerous enemies on the planet and saying, oh, by the way, trust me, there's not an attack coming unless I tell you, that would not cause even more consternation on the other side that an attack is coming.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
I mean, this is. I don't want to sound like I'm. Again, I don't want to sound like I've got some incredible depth of foreign affairs experience, but this is Godfather 101. You know, if you're going to kill somebody, you tell them, I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to give you a kiss of friendship. If I'm going to murder, and if I'm not going to murder you, I'm going to tell you, I'll tell you I'm going to kill you. One of the most interesting parts of Mario Puzo's book that I recall that stood out with me when I first read it is when Sonny Corleone goes to his sister's husband, whose name I've just dumped,
Carlo,
and tells him, you know, beats him up, you know, because he smacked the sister around, Connie around, beats the guy up, and then says, "You ever touch my sister again, I'll kill you." And the guy, Puzo writes that the guy felt an intense feeling of relief because he knew that the fact that Sonny had uttered those words meant he wasn't going to do it. And the opposite, the flip side of this is true. I don't know what the hell Millie was thinking of. This is so beyond the pale. Now, is it treasonous? It would definitely be treasonous if he actually did it. Telling him he's going to do it, I mean, I can see a situation where, you know, a certain amount of instability and you think you've got this special relationship with a communist military official, and so you try to calm the waters. But that's not the situation. It really wasn't. So that's number one, and that's bad. But the second situation, where he goes and talks to his subordinates and says, yeah, the president gives the orders, but we're the ones that got to carry them out, and, you know, we don't have to carry it out necessarily if we disagree with it, that's mutiny. And that is much more serious. So let me give you, I mean, if there are no consequences for this, let me give you the scenario now that is much more believable.
All right, let me back up just a second.
That you have a general who thinks Joe Biden's demented and incompetent, and who says, you know what, I think not only am I not going to carry out the president's orders because I think he's a senile, demented old man who is raging, who is rambling and nuts, I'm going to take an affirmative step to make sure that I'm insulating him from these decisions. Specifically, I'm going to move the troops of the Military District of Washington into a protective stance. Or, you know, he's not recognizing the white supremacy that sits out there in the rest of the country, and I've got to protect our D.C. elect and elites from something. So I'm going to make an affirmative move. This is incredibly dangerous.
Lou, I'll back up here a hair, and because this is maybe my economic training. Nothing happens in a vacuum. I mean, this absolutely. I mean, if you and I would have sat in a class together, and somebody were to say, "Okay, the country has got this system of checks and balances where the president is the supreme commander, but oh, by the way, he can't declare war on anybody unless he gets the Congress to say okay," and then. So he is the supreme commander, but he's got a buffer. Now, for how many years now, and you know the laws better than me, we've decided to rid ourselves of the buffer to the point where the president, on very many occasions, even countries we don't even know we're allegedly at war with, we've dropped bombs there, we've done stuff in this
Obama, this was the one, you know, and then again, because the press was in love with him, Obama unilaterally declared war on Libya with no notification to Congress.
But I mean, it's in my lifetime, it started with Bush 1 when the neocons around him, because they were really anxious to push presidential power, the Cheneys, the Rumsfelds, those people, and they wanted to go, even though the first Iraq thing was not a declared war. Bush said, no, I'm going to Congress and I'm letting know what we're doing and we're going to get somewhat permission, even though it wasn't a declaration of war. But Cheney and Rumsfeld were really pissed off at him when he did that. But he pushed back on that because he said, no, that's why the Constitution is the way it is. But they didn't want it. And Obama took that to the next step. But now we're at the point where most people...
Trump did not, interestingly enough.
Well, he always threatened he would, or people thought he would, which was
people,
wrong.
No. The mainstream press thought he was unstable and promoted this idea that he was just one step away from pushing the button.
Okay, but listen to what I'm saying here.
That's an ideological view that does not comport with reality.
My point was, my concern with Trump was pretty much the exact same way. I thought the man was unstable. I still think he's unstable. But the idea that these guys have now done this for a while, like a long while, the idea that he could, quote, push a button without going through Congress and getting a formal declaration of war is very chilling to me.
But that's always been the case, and that's always, the president has always technically had that ability. Milley's move by a general officer, but in a ranking position like this, is a nightmare. We don't have some. If this doesn't go unanswered,
okay,
then we have lost civilians.
Well, all right, but let's finish our little joust here. I don't think China has done all kinds of nasty stuff to the Uyghurs and all kinds of people, and I don't like them. I never have, but. The idea that our president could say, well, you know what, enough's enough, let's drop a nuke on him without asking Congress, I don't think we're there yet, Lou, are we? And if I'm the general, I'm saying I'm not doing it. Where the hell is your declaration of war?
Well, okay, so let's go, first of all, to the fact that there was no indication that Trump was going to do anything like that.
Well, okay.
The Chinese were nervous that there was going to be some kind of a response to their violation of Taiwan's airspace and violation of international law with respect to the South China Sea and their increasing belligerence over the Taiwan Straits. And Milley, for whatever reason, decided to take it upon himself to make that phone call.
But
for him, you know, is there a buffer? There is a buffer. The president doesn't have the ability to do that out of the blue. But the president does have the ability to do that in response to what he believes is about to be an attack on U.S. forces or an actual launch of nuclear weapons against the United States.
But that would
he doesn't have to go to Congress
I know,
for that.
Okay, but that would come to him from the military.
Well, it would come to him from the defense, from the intelligence agencies, not necessarily the military.
Well, but I'm saying he would be presented with, hey, look, it looks like these guys are going to start bombing Taiwan. We better get our aircraft carrier over there and some submarines and let them know that if they do it, we're not going to put up with it. There's a process there. The military would have to be somewhat involved.
We would see indications. I don't think it's possible for anybody to wake up, for the president to wake up in the middle of the night one night and say, geez, I just had a dream.
Yeah.
Let's launch a nuke. I don't think that's possible right now.
It shouldn't be, for sure.
But, to do this on your own without any indication from the president that this was about to happen or anybody else, just based on the fact that the president is who he is, and we've known who he is for a long time, this is an incredibly dangerous move by Milley.
I don't disagree.
And I'm just gonna pitch this out. The idea that an octogenarian who has exhibited all kinds of issues of mental capability is calling Milley and telling him that septuagenarian in the White House is crazy. You know that is absolutely nuts. And again, this goes back to the ideological perspective of these people that they will do anything. This is Trump derangement syndrome at its finest. They will do anything, and anything is okay. To damage Trump, and that's the way they were operating. Biden needs to do two things. The first thing he needs to do is he needs to bring Milley into his office and sit him down. And this hasn't happened. The fact that this hasn't happened yet is unbelievable to me.
Oh, me too.
He needs to sit Milley down and say,
"What happened?
This is true." And establish either to his satisfaction, either A, it's true, or B, it's not. If it's true, you're fired. And I'll let the military work out whether you get your pension. If it's not true, I'm going to issue a statement of public confidence in Milley.
Lou, these people.
But let this sit like this is insane. Lou, and again, I, based on what I'm seeing with other things from this administration with regard to the military, I think they have no clue, which is terrifying for people who've been in public life like Uncle Joe for, you know, what is it, 50 years.
Lou, I think you can go from day to day there, going from one topic to the next, and never grasp the big picture. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on. This happens, you know, it happens to everybody. I'm going to say it clearly happens.
This is a big one, Chief. This is one of the fundamental elements of our national culture.
But it's also
the
something
if you control of the military.
But if you are sitting in the Oval Office one day and you get up and you're drinking your coffee and all of a sudden this drops on your desk, you go, where the bleep did this come from?
you see the story. Yeah. Okay, fine. This was one of Trump's strengths. Trump treated his public officials and the people in the executive branch as if they were his employees. And I think that's the right way to do it. You pick the phone up, you call Millie, and you say, in my office, in an hour.
I somewhat disagree with you on that. It gets to the same place. I think you treat these people like they're our employees. That they work.
I'm the elected representative of the people. I'm the only national elected representative we have, the only one. So I'm the guy that the people have picked to manage this thing. And I'm going to manage it.
But it's endemic. Quick story, but it's always on the same topic. At least I think it is.
Lose this, explain to me why Joe Biden has not either fired him or given him a statement of public support.
I dance around this. I'm like Jimmy Stewart, for God's sake. I'm going to say that
Jimmy Cagney. He was a better dancer.
We had a representative at one of our, well, Mesro had a seminar, a meeting of their correspondents, and they asked me to go talk on protected index programs and policies and using options. And
why hasn't Biden fired him or brought given him a statement of support?
I'm going to try. The lady who was there was a representative, Melissa Bean, I think was her name. And she's very nice, had been in business on her own and so forth. And I said, okay, this is back in the 2007 fiasco. I said, you've got all these big banks picking up little banks. And I said, okay, it looks to me like some of these deals are pretty advantageous. How does somebody get on that list, or do a few people from the House or the Senate, on, you know, one side of the aisle or the other, are they charged with, you know, a review of the last 10 bank takeovers? Does anybody review what the staff does? And she looks at me like I had four heads. Why would we do that? That's exactly what she said. And I said, well, because, in my opinion, you just gave a bank away to somebody. How do I get on that list? And she goes, well, you don't. So I think that the people, in all the 50 years he's been there, Lou, they never hold anybody's feet to the fire. And this is just chapter 100 of it.
And that, I agree with you. I mean, why isn't someone been fired over Afghanistan? I come back, we'll go back and get my one sports comment in here. The Navy football team got their heads handed to them by Air Force at Annapolis. They had 68 yards of total offense. The Navy offensive coordinator, at the direction of the athletic director, was fired within hours at the end of that game. Now, they ultimately ended up demoting him and putting him in as a quarterback's coach. But the issue of there's more accountability in the Navy football program than there is in the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The Air Force Academy fired its starting quarterback last year because of an honor violation. They removed that kid from the team, and he ultimately left the academy. There's more accountability in the Air Force football program than there is in the Joint Chiefs of Staff. In the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Well, there's no accountability anywhere. Look at how Pfizer's pushed around our Center of Disease Control people. They're running the place.
Well, I got another story on that for you. We'll do that next week after I hope after I get my lawsuit filed. The point that I get to is, this is one of these. I mean, you could talk accountability till the cows come home, but on something like this, something major like this, you know, Obama did not hesitate to fire Stanley McChrystal, when McChrystal made some offhand flip remark in an airplane to a bunch of reporters that you know was counter to Obama's policy, and he fired him. And I didn't like it, but because I thought McChrystal knew what he was doing, but I can't disagree with that. Why has Biden? And again, this is such a fundamental element of our culture and our national support system that we have generals who answer to our civilian folks. If this festers, if this doesn't get resolved, Milley has broken a boundary that is really problematic for the future.
I don't know.
Again, why Biden by not either firing him, which is ought to be axiomatic, or giving him a measure of public support because he doesn't believe the story.
Well, we got a dash here, but I'm going to say in all the committees he's been on, neither he nor anybody else actually held anybody's feet to the fire in any of the interviews. Look at the people they have in front of these. They never fired the Federal Reserve.
This is not some political hack. Mid-level bureaucrat making a mistake.
I don't disagree.
This is a big one.
You
don't let this go.
I don't disagree. All right, bud, we'll talk at it next week, and hopefully you get your stuff done, and we can talk about that, too.
Roger that.
SP Futures down 11, NASDAQ Futures down 51. Come back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body, too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.
Chief, I feel like we could just let this go for a little minute, huh?
That's about the truth. Do we have Mr. Dan?
Hello?
Hello, Dan, you're with us, bud. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing all right. Market's leaking. Are we going to leak off yesterday's gains, or what are we going to do here?
Seems like we're having a weekly rotation, if you will. It seems like each week, depending on the day of the week, we're having some part of the market is it's favoring, some part isn't. So yesterday was a good day for us. The sort of the rotation, if you will, the cyclicals, maybe more defensive names, some of the names that we've been mentioning, like MasTec and SWM, had really good days yesterday. So there seems to be the, you know, a little bit of a pickup in volatility, which I think is part of the reason for this, and a little bit of uncertainty, I think, in terms of, you know, the market reaching new highs and where to go from here.
You think, I think there's some the last week or two, the idea that every day, every morning, it seemed like, well, last week we were up in the morning and then leaked badly into the close. That to me is a little bit of a tone change. I don't know what's going to last, if it's just a September thing or what, but that's clearly has not been the pattern for 12 years. I mean,
right. Yeah, and I agree with you. I think it is more of a September thing. I think it's the mentality of sort of coming back to work, coming back to school, and although there's even some uncertainty with that and the way that's happening, there's been some margin compression that companies have been dealing with, although I think they've been able to pass on a lot of the input costs to the consumer right now, but I think there's some questions as to how long that's going to last. And then, of course, the talk that we've had for quite a while about the infrastructure package, which I'm in favor of. I want to, especially the first part of it, I'd really like to see that pass, because I think that would be very good for our markets. The second part of it seems like there's still confusion, which could last for months, and every day that gets sort of held back, I think investors are somewhat concerned as to what the final what the final word is going to be. But I think if we're patient, we're going to continue to see good a good performance and good momentum into the end of the year here. I don't see anything else. There's a lot of positive, there's a lot of cash on the side, both companies and individuals. Consumer, so the CPI number was off the other day, but, I think that's, it's a one quarter number, and I don't think we should be paying too much attention to a number that's coming during a period of transition, if you will.
I'm on the opposite side of that argument. You're going to have a nice conversation next week.
Yesterday I
brought two words that I never thought I'd have to use again. The misery index and the stagflation. I dragged them out of the
Yeah, I've heard both of those this week.
In the last 3 days, the Wall Street Journal, I guess they, who knows where they got, I've not seen those statistics yet, but they came out and said that last year the income across the board was down 2.9%. Now, we know that that's not even, because stock market was up, so if you're whatever part you are of the population, clearly it affected you differently. Some people did exceptionally well. Some people got a boatload of government money that I won't say didn't deserve it, but maybe most people would say they weren't affected very much and got money anyway.
Right.
And so, it very uneven performance. But then the government, somebody came out and from the government and reacted to Wall Street Journal numbers and said, if you add back in the money you got from the government, we're actually positive. And the thing that gets me, Dan, is now it's not whether the numbers add up or add down. I mean, I don't really care about that. Do we really have people in our government that are that ignorant that they don't realize that the money they sent people is a loan? The people in the next 10 years are going to have to pay it back, tax-wise.
Right.
It doesn't match up against income not made, does it? Am I an idiot?
Absolutely. It's not this endless spigot of money coming out the faucet to pay it. No, I totally agree with you on that. And I think there's going to have to be a little bit of a shift back to people, kind of accepting that, because it has been free money for so long. And I think people are going to have, it does take time for some people to get back into a mentality of, working for yourself, working hard, moving ahead, and understanding that money, like you say, which I totally agree, is more of a loan, may not be a loan to them. It's a loan to all of us, because it's all going to end up getting paid back. So that's why I've been a proponent of sort of the quicker to get back to normal with work, the better. And a lot of people have also been used to kind of work from home, still collecting a decent paycheck. Maybe their income hasn't gone up as much, but they've saved a lot in costs by working from home. So there's this, this other phenomenon that I think may be, you know, maybe changing over time. So I think as investors, we just have to be patient with this period we're in, because the volatility, I think, is still derived from some of the uncertainty as to how it plays itself out. I don't think everybody leaves work and retires. I don't think there's going to be this, you know, this problem of finding help that companies have had for so long. I think this, and some of the supply chain issues, I think will work themselves out. But it might just take a little longer than we had been expecting a few months ago. So that's going to create this day-to-day volatility, if you will. You know, like you're saying, we here in South Florida, we tend to get sunny during the first part of the day, and then, you know, right around the time the market's sort of selling off is when the rain starts coming, the clouds start coming in. So that's, you know, I think there is still, you know, that overhanging, I want to call it impatience, because I do think, I am confident that we're going to come back to some normalcy in time.
Well, how do you assess, because I mean, I remember I wasn't in school yet, but when the inflation started and the amount of years it was of, and this is in the '70s, the amount of years it took for the people essentially causing it, the Federal Reserve, for them to say it was our fault. It was pushing 7 years, six, right. 7 years, where a couple of, you know, academic guys, Friedman being one of them, would wind around Washington and say, it's not the Arabs, it's you idiots, basically.
Right.
And, but they didn't believe him. I mean, nobody, I mean, he was a caricature walking around town. I mean, he was the guy you laughed at. He looked like Elmer Fudd Kent anyway. You know, so, I mean, they didn't believe, I mean, right now, we still have people putting out stuff that say, okay, used cars are up, I think it was, I looked yesterday, 32% in the last year. Now, last month they were down 1%. We're okay. No, we're not. I mean, we're not. Do they actually believe that, or is this the crap they're feeding on? No, we're not. I mean, I see the restaurants and places that are open here, and I, you know, I go out a little bit. I mean, I'm not out every night or anything like that, but the sticker shack, every place I go, I can't even. I was at a, like, I was, took Audrey to a, maybe you'll meet her when you come to town, a Mexican place near her. We go all the time. $27.50 for fajitas in a neighborhood joint? Really? I mean, you know, every place is 5 to 1. I can't imagine bringing a family of 6 in there, and even if the kids eat tacos, what's the bill? $200 for tacos? I mean, really? I mean,
yeah.
I know how much it costs to make tacos. It ain't $200. I'm just saying. I mean, and I know these guys are overburdened with leases and with this and with electric bills. I don't see how you run a business now and can and make any. Then you get less people. Then you charge even more. Then you get less people, and you charge even more.
Right. That's definitely not a good business model. Or the, you know, the ingredients are, you know, I mean, the portions are smaller and the prices are higher, and that's not a good business model to have. I think what happened in the summer is that people were so anxious to get out. So I know that I was out more, eating out more, and with family and friends, and the one thing we all noticed is that places were full, and people were willing to pay the prices because they were so anxious to get back to the routine, yep, of seeing their friends and getting out. At some point, I think that's going to, you know, especially now with the back to work, back to school, I think there won't be as much of that. People will still be doing takeout and all that, and you can still find a place that's a little less expensive. But I think that, as I was saying earlier, the input costs, there's only so much time for the companies to continue to pass these along to consumers before consumers suddenly slow down, and I think the CPI number might be a good example of that. Same thing with, if you use a used car as an example, I know several people who were in the market for a new car, and there was always the option of looking at used cars, and that option is gone now. So it's, I think people are trying to do their best what they can with what they have. Same thing with home property. You know, the sticker shock of, you know, we'd love to sell this house, but you know, where are we going to go? So there's, you know, let's fix it up a little more, let's put a little more money into it. So there's sort of, I think, the trends that we've seen, these trends are going to continue, and those are going to continue to help certain businesses and maybe hurt other businesses. But the one thing that I still believe that's going to help us long run is just that there is a lot of cash. out there. People do have a lot of money. The value of your home property has gone up. The value of your 401k is up, at all-time highs. The value of your home is at all-time highs. So people have a little more flexibility. And maybe we've talked about people stepping out of the workforce in the baby boomer generation. There are also plenty who are staying in and saying, hey, I can work from home now. This has created an environment that's, a nice transition to retirement, so maybe I'll stick around for a couple more years. So there are a lot of positives, I would say, to continue to keep our economy going, and I don't think the government is going to act so quickly on, for example, taxes. I think there's going to be some infighting for months before we actually see anything pass on corporate taxes, and it looks like the amount keeps coming down. That would be the number I'd be looking at. 26.5 is what they're talking now, but I think they're going to get it down to 25. And 25, I think, would be a good start if that's the direction they're going in.
Why should corporations pay so little? Yeah,
I think they should be paying more, but I think there are corporations out there that aren't paying that seem to get around it, which, and they tend to be the corporations that we use, the Amazons and the McDonald's and, the companies that are, have found a way to not pay the full amount, if you will. I don't know if any of those tax breaks should be continuing, but then there's also, tax breaks that could be given for things like clean air and all that. And so somehow there are going to be companies that are going to, be able to, get tax breaks during a period of time when, maybe some individuals don't have tax breaks aren't as good for individuals. So
how come
I did see some advertisements recently. I don't know if you've seen these, where Delta is actually coming out as the first sort of clean airline, and I was kind of a little bit confused by that, but, I'm sure there are some benefits, tax benefits. So, in general, I think we want to see companies do well, but we also want that to be balanced with not having to overpay and not to impact the individual or consumer to a point where they're stretched. And that's kind of the battle, I think, that's going on that we're going to be paying attention to. And I think that's going to continue to create the volatility in the next few months.
Well, everybody wants to pay less than the next guy. We've never had anything that was fair.
I want to throw a question out for you two gentlemen. As the resident Joe Schmo of investors here, right, a guy who's kind of just got the layman's ideal of, hey, I want to put some money into the market. I want to do something that's, maybe not like anything huge. Typically, as I look at things, I always try to identify, this is a new product or this is a new service that's being used. And typically, as an average consumer, right, you're typically late. If you're just finding out about it or you're reading it in the paper, typically you've already passed the point of profit. So as someone who may be looking, trying to invest, what do you suggest for, a common thought process on, hey, how do you get into a certain market or how do you get into a certain investment that might help someone who's looking to get started?
Good question. It's, I think it really depends. The first thing is you have to determine what your goals are, what your time horizon is, how much of a loss you're willing to take. So if you're interested in if you have a particular interest in a certain industry or a certain field and you want to invest in that area, you have to also have if you're invested in the equity, you have to have putting the amount of money into that type of investment, you have to be able to say, I'm willing to take a 50% loss at most. So that's the first thing. And then once you've made those decisions, you have to start, I would always recommend diversifying, not just buying one stock, but buying, you may have a name, let's say a biotech or a feeder into one of the electric car businesses, something that's a product, but balance that with some more conservative, more defensive names. Some of the names that we've been talking about, if you're interested in clean air, balance that with buying a BKH, which is Black Hills. We've talked about a utility that pays a high dividend, very low beta, and you're able to get I think that'll keep your mini portfolio, if you will, from, you know, it'll definitely help with the volatility. It'll help temper the volatility of getting all in. The research that you see will be the research everybody else sees, and institutional investors definitely have very good access to that information, and because they can buy in size, they will have an advantage. I will say that a lot of your decision making is common sense, but our process is looking at management teams and trying to see who's running, looking at the history of what management has done, and not getting so caught up in the product, but get to understand the company itself and how the company is managed and how the company is managed during tough times.
I think there's a split, and Dan alluded to it. There's kind of a split in the road. If there's a fork in the road, take it, said Yogi. If you're trying to find the stock that is going to go from 10 to 50, no matter what the market does, I mean, it's kind of one line of work. And the other, when you invest, you just want to invest in stocks that maybe do as well or as a little better than the economy for the next 30 years and share some with you. And those are two totally different sort of directions, wouldn't you say, Dan?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then one of the names that we've talked about for a while, Thunderbird Entertainment, which is it's a Canadian company, but they've done really well. The stock has more than doubled this year, but I still think they have a long way to go. They're a micro-cap company, and they're a company that will do well in good times and in bad times because they're a company that is focused on producing content for movies and TV, and they have a great management team. Their stock, on the day that the market's down, their stock tracks up, and you can kind of catch you by surprise. So the past week, before yesterday, the past couple weeks, this stock has been up about 5%, and it's not widely followed. So this is a name that I think if you had in your portfolio, and you held it for a period of time, when you have a long-term time horizon, it's going to be a very strong winner. It's going to outperform the market. But then on the other side, I'd say if you have a particular area of the market that you think is going to do well, that you have an interest in, when you're exploring those names, make sure that you look at the company as a whole. Make sure that you don't strictly say, I want to be in cannabis, I'll buy whatever the name is that's done the best. You really have to get to know the companies, their products. You have to really dig a little deeper and find out what's going on in order to make an investment that's going to be lasting. So you're looking for long term, and I think, like Tom said, you know, something that's going to do as well as the market or better. That's how you make money. That's how you add alpha.
Well, yeah, that's the hope, right?
The question is, do you want to buy, you know, some company that is might go from 10 to 300, or do you want to figure that a guy like Dan finds you? I just throw a name out there, and I'm not pushing it. If you're going to say, you know, these guys that pick a place, you know, Procter & Gamble or Home Depot or whatever, over a 20-year period, these guys seem to be doing better than other people. Why not just ride with them? But they're not going to double. They're not going to, but, you know, hopefully people are always going to want soap.
So I think that's an interesting strategy. I just want to make sure that I clearly understood, right? So what Dan was kind of suggesting was that maybe you invest in maybe some sort of natural material or natural type of gas, and then you hedge the bet a little bit on maybe something that's cleaner
well, but
type.
But the other thing that, because I actually want to ask Dan some questions sort of the same you just did, the problem with that is whatever you buy, and Dan has alluded to it. I mean, Dan's always much more enthusiastic in a lot of these places than most. But Dan, I'm talking for you, Dan. You also have said, "Gee, we bought this stock somewhere, and it's done so well. I don't know if I'd buy it here." And you guys have gotten rid of it. It's like a two-edged problem, Thomas. It's you look at a company, you love the company, and you look at the price. It's very much like buying somebody's old sports car. You know, I really like that car, but no, $200,000. No, I'm not paying $200,000 for it. I'll give you $30,000 for it. I mean, you don't want to get fleeced either, right? I mean, it's a question of you like the place, but do you like it that much? You know, I mean, that's I have a question for you, Dan. I really wanted to thank you, Thomas, for bringing up a question like that because I have one close. I actually talked to somebody yesterday, prospective client.
I'm reading your Cliff Notes.
Yeah, seemed like a terrific guy. And he says, well, you know, I used to invest a lot, and then we got involved in some business, and we did all our stuff with that. Now we basically have, He goes, my wife's very conservative. And so we have, you know, basically, I'm going to pick a number. I'm going to say $1 million in the bank. I mean, literally in the bank. And I said, well, there's some stuff. I said, one of the guys on the show, he has some really good, more fixed income stuff, and it's something you might want to think of. I said, but here's the trick bag you're in. I said, right now, no matter what you hear from the government and our snake oil salesman people, fact is, you've got a negative interest rate. So I'll pick a number. If the number is $1 million and you're in the bank, by next year, your $1 million is now worth 940 or 950. No matter what, I mean, and I'm going to say maybe 900, but then I'm the high end of that side. You may not have to believe me. So by not participating somewhat, you're losing, you know, which it shouldn't be that way. I mean, you should be able to get 3.5% or more, like when my parents were alive back in the 70s. You should be able to maintain this in the bank, but now you can't. Okay, these are the cards we've been dealt. Now, also, you're dealt a market that's pretty friggin' high. And, you know, and some of these stocks are, you know, 200 times making nothing and 50 times revenue, which nobody wants to buy. They're the $200,000 sports car, although they are popular. I said, so you got to get yourself somehow in a way where we can somehow participate, but with enough protection where if all hell breaks loose and everybody loses 50%, you lose 4 or 5. Because then at least you'd be able to buy stuff cheaper. There's going to be some risk, but it's a very difficult time to engage the 2 million or 5 million, whatever somebody has in the bank, and say, I think now's the time. And even you, Dan, would have trouble with that one. I mean, am I wrong? Obviously, with somebody of that sort of conservative bent, what can you do for them here? I mean, what would you say?
I think you move into the market slowly. You don't invest it all at once on one day. You move into it slowly. And on the down days, you know, we've talked about this recently, some names like MasTec, which I think is, you know, great infrastructure name, really solid management. You know, it traded up to 122. It's now at about 90. It got as low as 86. It's actually about 92 right now. So it's had a nice little rally the last couple of days. But some of it is timing the market and looking at where it's been. You don't necessarily want to be buying everything at the top. If you like the company and it's sold off 20%, that might be a good time to step in.
Yeah.
We're definitely more value managers than growth managers, so we're looking for we're not wanting to pay top dollar for the company. That's just not – we don't believe that's the best thing. So buying a little bit at a time – starting with some of the income, whether it be an income dividend stock like an SWM or a BKH, which, like I said, Black Hills Utility, which are fairly stable companies, haven't had a lot of volatility in price. Those would be the names that I think would be a good place to start. When the market sells off, then you can add some of the names that are, that trade with the market. And then, in the meantime, look for some names that are smaller, that have beta that is low, that is not highly correlated with the market, and a story that you like, and really try to get to know the company as best you can, and add that to your portfolio as well. There are people that will,
hey Dan, Dan,
will take a big position in, you know, something like Bitcoin or whatever, but even there you have to know where to put your money. You just can't say, hey, I like this idea, I'm going to put it into whatever comes up first. You have to do a little bit of homework.
Yeah.
Or ask an expert.
Yeah, and I heard a guy that got a maximum second mortgage on his house and put it all in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you like roller coaster rides, that would be a good one.
Dan, we only got a minute.
Maybe what Tom is looking for more is a way to get started, is a name that you can sit on for a period of time and don't necessarily have to sell. And I mentioned, Thunderbird is my recommendation there. They're a name that I think is going to do well. They're a low-priced stock. They're a micro-cap stock that I think is going to continue to grow. Hard to do that with a company that's already seen, you know, already broken records every day, and it's, you're starting to see a lot more volatility. So, slowly step in. You can also, even with the same name, if it's one name that you like, you don't have to buy it all in one day. You can piece it out over a year or over a period of time, make your larger purchases on days when the market is off.
Dan, I have we have to dash here, but I it's on the tip of my tongue. I have to ask one more question, so I don't mind running over with you a tad. it doesn't appear, given the strength of the lobbyists, and I'm going to say the weakness of what I think in this current administration. I didn't like the last one either, but so I mean, when you're in the middle, you can do that. You can not like anybody. Do you think there's any chance of a tax change that would really have a problem with some of these companies that everybody loves? I mean, Amazon, from what I understand, pays next to nothing. And Tesla, if they didn't sell the carbon credits that they got from the government to the other companies, they make no money. Is there any chance that they're going to say no more carbon credit? I mean, don't those guys sell like $400 million a year or a quarter to other companies? I mean, if they didn't have those, would they have any income at all?
Right. No, I agree. It's there's a, that's a tough question because there's the political issues as well as investment issues and financial issues. And companies like that have seemed to have gotten around the financial issues by promoting some of the political issues or the issues that are going to, save them tax money. One thing I have noticed because I've gone to a lot of conferences, and over the past year, there's been a huge push to whatever part of the company's business may be eligible for a tax credit, if you will. So if it's going to be clean air or renewable energy, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that companies are looking for that now.
I'm just worried about what happens to your stock price if all of a sudden it stopped. I don't think there's any danger of that, but if it ever did, wow. I mean, that would not be a good day.
I think it would have an impact on your stock price.
All right, Dan, next week, buddy, we'll see you in person.
Yes, we'll see you in person.
And yes. we'll get ourselves together as to itineraries and so forth, so we have some time, and we're looking forward to it. S&P Futures down 9, NASDAQ Futures down 49. Be back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
There you go. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Thomas Hall on the board. S&P Futures not only down 4.25%, NASDAQ futures down 41%. Retail sales came out with an uptick of 0.7% in August versus an expected decline of 0.8%, which is a surprise. I didn't realize that they were expecting it to be down, but evidently they were. But whoever the they's are, in the immortal words of your, I don't even know if you were around when he was mayor, but who are all these alligators? Richard J. Daley, right? Dow futures down 74 in Europe. We've got the DAX. These guys are going up today. They didn't go up as much as we did yesterday, so they're a little bit of catch up. DAX up 78.5%, FTSE up 15.2%, CAC around up 71. It's 1%. They're pretty huge. CAC around has been a lot more volatile than the other two this week, and that sort of rarely happens. They're usually the least volatile, but this week not so. Over in Asia, whack, whack, whack. Nikkei down 188.6%, Shanghai down 49.1%, Hang Seng down 365.1%. Hang Seng is here. Their 52-week range is 23,000 to 31,000, and they're down to 24,667. So off the high, it's 31, so they're down 7, okay, pretty much from the high. So that's 20% would be 6, so they're down 20%. So I'm going to say bear market territory for those guys. Ouch. A lot of it has to do with this. We'll talk a little about Jan with this. I mean, they seem like they're really taking a shot at these casinos over there. When I say they, the Chinese government, and I'm not sure what exactly their motivation is there, but anyway, they're doing something. Yesterday, for a way of review, we had a nice rally. Dow up 236, S&P up 37, NASDAQ up 123, so strong gains. We've been down for a while, so there was a pretty good bounce. Yesterday, we were heading right back down, but now it looks like the retail sales numbers have helped somewhat and will come back some. 10-year up 3 basis points to 1.34. The Bund up 1 to minus 0.29 only. Japan up 1 to positive 0.04. So they're right been there, 3.45 forever. So you can't really count on that. Oil, which was up this morning, is down 53 cents, 72.08. Brent down 52, 74.94. Got natural gas down 20 cents. Wow, 5.26, which is still really high. RBOB down a penny at 2.19. We got gold, whack, whack, down 26 bucks, 17.68. Silver down 51 cents. That's a huge move, 23.29. And copper down 8 cents, 4.32. So the metals are getting clobbered today, and we're not exactly sure why that is. We got the Fed meeting, and the dollar's down. So, I mean, I guess that does something. We got our crypto. Bitcoin's up $2, 48,077, so let's say that's unchanged. Thomas, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
All right, and good morning again, everybody. It's now 7:37 here in the Chicagoland area. Currently, the weather stands at 67 degrees. We're going to reach a high of 79 with some clear skies and a pretty well day here in September. Our Phoenix listeners are currently at 77 degrees. They're going to reach a high of 105, so clear, no precipitation there. Our Chicago traffic, as reported earlier on the I-57 inbound, they were clearing off a investigation of a shooting back at 159th. The backup seems to have started clearing up here around 149th. Other than that, there are just the general buildup for your morning commute. In sports, the White Sox fell on a homer off of Kopech in the eighth inning, and they dropped to the Anaheim Angels, or LA Angels, 3-2. The Cubs also fell, this time in Philadelphia, as they lost in the ninth inning on a pass ball, and the Chicago Cubs lose 6-5. Chief.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
Here, Tom.
How are you, bud?
I'm good. How about you?
Well, you're not as good as if you would have met up with us last night.
I know.
Ended up being a very interesting evening. Just saying.
My invite was in the mail, by the way.
You almost got a call.
Yeah, it sounds like my last couple of dates. We almost called you.
If I would have known you were going to be on this morning, I would have given you the buzz.
Yeah, good to know.
But you guys switched. So, anywho, one question from this, more for Thomas than you, Jen. Where the hell is everybody in baseball? The last four or five games that I've watched, there's nobody there. was nobody in Philadelphia. There was nobody in Oakland.
Well, nobody should be in Philadelphia. The Cubs are atrocious. The Philadelphia Phillies are a game over 500, and I'm not sure where they currently stand in the wild card. But
they were still in it.
Yeah, but again, it's Philadelphia, right? Like, so they're in it, but are they really in it? Other than maybe a playoff appearance, I don't think that that team is built to go anywhere, especially in the National League where you have your predominant teams versus the teams that are not, you know, like the Cubs are in a rebuilding mode. So I still think that there is a lot to be said about the precautions that people are taking and wanting to go to larger events. You would think actually baseball would be more conducive to people wanting to go out because it's outdoors and it's open. But, you know, I think it depends on the area and the team.
You're obviously part of the new breed that thinks winning is the product and not baseball. But that's...
I'm just suggesting to you that teams that win tend to draw more attendance. I'm sure that there's a stat that backs that up somewhere.
Oh, I'm with you. But I guess what... My point is, well, one of them, is that as a former season ticket owner, and Jan, feel free to opine in here, the seats that I'm talking about that are empty, they have to have been sold. I mean, there's no way that the first 15 rows in Philly have not been sold before the year starts.
Well, so you're a season or a former season ticket holder, so you know what the bane of the existence of that is. So think about it like this, right? Like, so you're correct. Those are probably sold. The season ticket holder probably on a Wednesday evening or Wednesday afternoon is not going to go to those games once their team is not really into it, unless there's some sort of corporate event.
But I'm saying if a company,
you can't give those tickets away, Chief.
I'm saying, well, that's where I'm getting to. If you have a company and the tickets are, you know, 150 a throw, which they probably are, and there's a game and you can't walk down to the guys in the mailroom and say, "Would you like to go to the game?" and they say, "Ah."
Well, I mean, unfortunately, Chief, no one's in the mailroom. Everyone's working from home.
Well, okay, but just in general, my point is, if you can't give them away, I mean, what's the old adage that this week's empty seat is next year's not sold ticket or something along those lines?
Right.
That's what's stuck it for me. As long as I could give them to somebody, I don't care if it was the bum on the street. If he says, "I'd love to go," I felt okay. As soon as he said, "I don't want them," what am I doing with these things? They're piling up on my desk at $80 a throw or whatever. They weren't 80, they were 50. I'm just saying. But
you happen to own the season tickets when the Cubs were at this god-awful atrocious for 3 years.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, John, I called down to the Board of Trade when they still had a Board of Trade. I go, "Hey, anybody in the..." I called on a 10-year pit. And I go, "Anybody down there want to go to the game?" Guy goes, "Nah, but send down your tickets." I go, "Well, what do you want my tickets for?" He goes, "He's got a big pile of them in the middle of the pit. Nobody wants them. Might as well add four more." That was probably the final straw. I mean, you're essentially a wholesaler with tickets. I mean, actually, big companies... I mean, I shouldn't say... This is not politically correct, but I'll say it anyway. Everybody knows that there's a lot of people that go to work for Washington, go to work in Washington, and I'm not talking about what they do or what they should do, but let's just say the people who work there are not the regular people in how they look. Is that a fair assessment?
What does that mean?
It means that the women that work there are smoking hot, and the guys are in pretty good shape. They're wearing suits all day. I mean, it's not going to the Wisconsin State Fair. I mean, when you look at if you go to the park there, the lobbyists, they have to have all these seats, right? They have to have the best seats. But they don't go. Let's just say that the show in those seats, the two nights I was there, was like something I've never seen. If it wasn't some guy that looked like he came out of GQ, it was some lady who was a 9 out of a scale of 10.
So you're saying I would fit in over there?
Not exactly. Just saying. It fit in as what? The vendor? The beer, we'd be the beer guys, for God's sake. I'm just saying, when you can't give them away, does it mean that next year there's going to be a drop in tickets? Is what I guess what I'm saying, or is everybody going to say next year?
Absolutely, will be common. Part of the dissatisfaction has to do with the changing protocols all the time about outdoor behavior generally.
Yeah.
But you've got, it's one thing. I could understand why people weren't showing up in big numbers when ticket prices were conspiring with food prices and parking prices to make a night out of the ballpark
pretty much, you know, a huge expenditure for the average person. But now when you clearly can't even give the tickets away, I think there's been a kind of rejection of this kind of entertainment. I don't think people are as turned on by the idea of being, you know, sitting in a chair for an interminable game.
Yeah, it's
and the, you know, forking over money for hot dogs that they could, you know.
Well, first of all, you're behind the times. You can't give them money; they won't take cash.
Oh, right.
Which is even more. Which is even
the
more.
Last year or two, I think, isn't right.
So, by the way, hey, just real quick, an anecdotal, because we always do research, and because then I want to tell you about where we ended up last night, Kevin and I, and why you should have been with us. You might have found a girlfriend. Let's just say, I'm not mentioning any name, but my buddy, I'll call him Dan, just got back from Vegas. And he stayed at Caesar's Palace. His wife had a convention, and he just kind of went along for the ride. It's in vacation time. And he said, Vegas, now, if you walk out Caesar's and turn right and head towards, like, the Bellagio and stuff, because it's not so bad. If you turn left and head, like, past the Mirage, the amount of homeless is dramatic. Like, they're all over the place. You don't even want to walk down there. And I go... And he says, the prices are so outrageous. In Caesar's Palace, people are bringing 12 packs. Everybody goes into Walgreens and buys 12 packs of water. Because obviously it's hotter than hinge the hell out there. There isn't a place in Caesar's or any of these other places. They got rid of the people on the street, a lot of them. You can't get a bottle of water for less than $5 or $6. And he goes, I went out to the pool and I got a Bloody Mary at the pool. Guess how much?
15.
Thomas?
No. Vegas?
Yeah.
We're going to say 25.
30.
Yep, and that's probably because the $5 extra is just because of the wherever, depends on if you're the Bellagio or if it's...
It was at Caesars.
Caesars, so. Exactly. So if you were at, like, Circus, that's 25. But if you're, you know, over across the street at the Venetian, that's 30.
God, they wonder why there's not a whole... I mean, I guess if your company's paying for it, but that's why your company doesn't want to go. I mean, it's just... Anyway, Jan, we...
A city like Philadelphia, you were mentioning that before, Tom.
Yeah.
I mean, what I hear about it from people I know who live there or around there is that it's got the same malaise that every big city has these days, that nobody wants to go anywhere, especially at dark, and especially in crowds. There's a kind of, you know, a rejection of that now as the thing that, you know, used to turn people on to do it. That was a fun thing to do, and now people are kind of overwhelmed by the creepiness of doing it. So there's definitely been a change of thinking about, you know, recreation time and, you know, where cities are going to have to go to fill in this void, because that's a huge hit all the way around for tourism, restaurants, hotels, everything.
And I'm sure I'm going to butcher this gentleman's name, but was it like a Pavlov's law where he's...
Pavlov's dog.
Yeah, where they're in a very real sense almost training new societal habits.
Yep.
You know, your year and a half, 2 years of being isolated or not being around large groups. There's a stigma now.
It becomes a habit to it.
There's a stigma attached to it, right?
But you can't let it go. If it's temporary, people pile out of it. But if we're at the point now where
it's not temporary, it's new societal habits.
Well, I was saying, John, when Kevin was on, my solution, or I don't know, I wouldn't be able to give you the solutions, but. One of the things I would do was to get people, the public employees, back to work immediately. And you know, I mean, there are a lot of places downtown here start to perk up if all of a sudden the Federal Reserve's back and a lot of these other places are back. I mean, I think you need to get the courts going. I mean, there's no reason for having the courts, you know, everything is Zoom still. I mean, I have one of the people we met last night, we went to... We went over to one of your favorites, Jen, Martin Anthony's, and you could have met us over there, but you didn't.
I was at Martin Anthony's over the weekend.
That's a great place, and they get interesting people there. Well, we end up meeting, of course, Kevin. I mean, he is so tuned. One of the people we met is a assistant principal of one of the Chicago Public School high schools. So, of course, they hit it on like there's no tomorrow with Kevin talking about one of the things for those who listen to Kevin. Twice a week. The thing they're doing in Indiana is they're very, the state is very, well, the state and the school that he works with, they are very into getting some, you know, in the midst of your you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic like you're supposed to be taking in high school, they do, they're starting to do a lot of stuff that makes you more employable. A lot of the supply chain stuff, how do you, route things. I mean, there's a lot of different stuff. I mean, a lot of business ethics, a lot of things that they do. But a lot of it is training for you to be, because Indiana is really into, the distribution area that used to be a lot of it in Chicago has moved there. So the trucks, the trains, and, you know, sending thing, the deliveries out to people, all the warehousing, a lot of that stuff is now, some in Joliet, some in the western suburbs, but a lot of it's moved to, northwest Indiana. And, so Kevin's school trains a lot of people for the person making $12 an hour can get certificates to where they're making 20 or 25. I mean, it's not, I mean, they're not really designed, Jan, to make somebody the president of the place.
Right, but it's a community college model.
It's a community college model with a lot of business ethics and all the other stuff thrown in that if you actually do want to learn the marketing and all the other things, you can do that as well if you think that you do have, you know, vice president written all over you, which a lot of people do that never had a chance to go to a regular school. So they try and do everything for everybody to get them the up in their station in life, and which is, I think, a really good model. But they're also pushing towards getting that into some of the regular high schools and saying, okay, I mean, we obviously used to do this here in Chicago and you had, at, you know, Tilden Tech and those places. They even had a garage there, an airplane engine in there where you taught how to be a mechanic on an airplane. I mean, they taught a lot of that stuff, welding, they took woodwork, and we have somehow gotten away from that. And I for one, I mean, everybody knows I still like remodeling homes, you know, after, when I'm done money managing. So, I mean, I just like doing it, and I don't see why your carpenter shouldn't know about economics or sociology or things like that. And John, I think you agree with me on that.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't see why, you know, the guy who's the welder shouldn't read a book once in a while, because a lot of those guys are pretty darn bright. I mean, I never look down on anybody. Anyway, the point is that the lady we were talking to, she said they haven't corralled 300 people. I won't say the high school. They're short 300 people from when this all started. And matter of fact, she had a dash last night to call a couple of the mothers, say, where the hell is your daughter? I mean, but Jan, from what I understand, the public schools get the I won't say the word allowance, but I guess I just did, is probably, the high school gets probably what, $18,000-$20,000 per student per year, right? Well, hell,
they report numbers, you know, early in the semester, in the school year.
Well, if you're short at a high school, 300 people, it's $6 million. How do you go with that kind of hole in your budget?
Well, you can't. I mean, you can't be spending the money the way you used to when you get that kind of a hole. And I think that's across the board. If you check any school, pretty much you see a huge drop. Year to year in just the number of students enrolled, let alone the ones who were showing up. I mean, that's a whole different issue.
Well, John, where are they, and where's the dough? I mean, the dough is someplace, because obviously the state budgeted for it. The money's someplace. And where the hell are the kids? They're gone? They left to another country, or they moved, or what happened?
Well, I think they're being homeschooled, or they've enrolled in other, you know, private schools. They've moved out of state. They've gotten someplace else, but maybe where the schools are better. I think there's a whole range of reasons that are pulling students out of the Chicago schools. It's always been offset by the infusion of people. You know, when the population used to grow, you didn't notice it that much. Now that the population is declining overall, I think it's going to be accentuated in the school numbers. But you're going to see, look at the number of schools that got closed down by Rahm Emanuel 6-7 years ago,
yeah,
and the hoopla about that, and that was long overdue, because there were way too many schools given the number of people they had in the system to educate. But it's only declined since then, and you're going to see, I think, another wave of school closures. You're going to see layoffs. You're going to see, you know, panic in this whole system that never seems to cost less money, despite the fact that there's fewer and fewer people connected to it. So,
well, there's still as many employees.
Right. Oh yeah. An increase in certain, you know, corners of the their hiring too. You know, they've probably been adding to staff, you know, as they always seem to be able to do somehow. But there just isn't enough energy to keep this kind of system going in this form. And we've got a new president of the school system as of yesterday. The CPS, Lightfoot hired somebody
Well, Jan, what you is, and I love to give you crap about this. Jan was a census taker. Just go watch the Three Stooges about where they were census takers. But your guys, the Census Bureau, came out and said as of April 1st of 2020, so last year, the population in Chicago actually upticked from 10 years before. Now, I'm going to say anecdotal evidence. Since that, I'll say they're right. Okay, I'll throw them a bone and say they're right. I'm going to say something from April 1st of last year to now. Where the hell is everybody? Where has everybody gone? I'll bet that number's down, you know, I don't know how many percent, John. It's got to be 5-6. I mean, the idea that you can't hire anybody, that somehow there's this, I'm going to say, fairly ignorant idea that there's, you know, 300,000 people sitting on their ass on a sofa getting a check from government. John, that's not right. These people are gone. Where'd they go, and how many are gone? There might be a few.
One of the things about those census numbers, Tom, and this came out in my experience with my supervisor in the closing days of the census, I think there are some prosperous areas of the city that grew, you know, certain zip codes, and those were fairly easy to enumerate because there wasn't, you know, there wasn't any threat to personal safety going in as a census taker to these buildings or walking down these streets. But in other places, where, you know, there's been a depopulation over the last 10 years, I think it's been accentuated in the census count because they couldn't find census takers to go into those more desperate neighborhoods because even the census supervisors were telling people, do you know what you're getting into here? You have to have a car. You can't do this if you don't have a car. So even the neighborhoods that were already losing population were, I think, severely undercounted, too. So maybe, you know, there could be an uptick in a certain socioeconomic level of the city's population, probably the more prosperous one. But overall, I think that the city is losing people faster than it can count.
Yeah, I want to ask you guys real quick before we get ready to close out for the day. We got Purdue versus Notre Dame this weekend. Notre Dame is a 7-point favorite. Who do you guys like, and what do you think the score is going to be?
I'm playing left tackle for the Irish. I didn't tell you that. They call me.
So we're taking Purdue plus the 7?
Plus, yeah, we're going to take Purdue.
I think the Irish will squeak by, Thomas. My niece has got to be at the game. She's a sophomore at Notre Dame. She's gung-ho about it. I'll go, 15-12, something like that, maybe. I think it'll be a low-scoring game.
What's our plan for Southern Cal? I mean, our guys are coming in. I'm willing to take the ride, John. I have no desire to go into the stadium. Are you back home with me? With our stops along the way, are you going to the game? What are you doing?
Am I going? You talking to me, Tom?
Yep. Well, you're the only John here. Yeah.
Yeah. Not go to the game. But I'll be watching it, following it.
Yeah, our guys are going to go. I think we couldn't. They can't.
Yeah, I've been watching the email exchange about it, but I won't be there.
So. I won't be there either. Although I could be talked in. I could be talked into a tailgate if I can get a good parking pass. Only if it's the best parking pass in the right spot.
And I would hammer Notre Dame minus the 7, by the way, just because I think that there is a kind of a return to form after a close game. I think that this game is kind of tailor-made.
Is Purdue? They haven't played them in years, so I haven't seen them. Are they any good?
No, I don't necessarily think they're that strong of a opponent, and traditionally Notre Dame does well against Purdue. So being at home, I think that it's a...
What's the trophy? Isn't that the... There's some trophy one of them gets or the other one.
I feel like there's a trophy for every game now. Like
Purdue plays Indiana. What, it's the old Oaken Bucket or something?
Right, right.
I don't know what happened.
Notre Dame rivalry in Purdue has an old one.
The guys that beat him were Bob Greasy beat him, 3 years in a row? And I don't know. I think the guy who came to the Bears beat him, Mike Phipps, too, didn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Anyway, Jan, thank you very much, bud. SP Futures down 250, NASDAQ Futures down 35. Thomas, nice job. Be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
And that's how she wrote.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.